tonight there's going to be a lesson for young people. So particularly for young people and for single adults who may be wanting to plan a family, that's where we're going to be focusing on tonight. And when I started doing this series years ago, one of the things I found interesting was that little kids like this series. The section we're doing this morning is usually about four lessons. I'm going to be just kind of hitting some highlights and slowing down here and there to get through it in one lesson. But kids are interested in this. And one thing I want to encourage all young people to think about your end to now obey your parents and stuff, but be planning what your family is going to be like. If you decide ahead to plan, here's biblical principles I want in my family, makes a world of difference in who you choose and what you do. The other thing I want to say is this. Not everybody needs to have a family, to be married and such. Jesus wasn't married. Paul wasn't married. And he talks about the advantages, in his case, of not being married. And he said some people have this gift, some people have that gift. So while we're talking about the family, we don't want to at all give the impression that to be a Christian, you need to be married and you need to have kids. That's not the way it always is, and that's not what people always choose. And I'm thankful that Paul was able to do what he did and not have that responsibility and be totally focused on something else. So we can serve God regardless. But whether you're planning to marry or not, whether you've been married and are widowed or a widower, we can all honor marriage and appreciate what the Bible says about it and about child training. I will say this because we're about to talk about child training. We were blessed with six kids, three boys, three girls. They were all born pretty much 4 years apart. So I've been having, until Obama, from Reagan's first term or second term till Obama, we always had a baby. You know, we're pregnant at presidential election time. I've still got one at home that just turned 16 and one that's in college that'll be home in a few weeks. But the first time I ever taught on child training was when I was single. And I was asked to go to a place and do it. And here's all these adults and everything, and I ride my motorcycle over there, and I'm going to talk to them about child training and such. But I went to the book of Proverbs. And so a lot of the things we say today is still in Proverbs. And so you don't have to have raised kids to know what the Bible says about it. So with those things done, let's begin. Child training. All right, Proverbs 22, verse 6. This is going to be our theme verse. We're going to come back to it again. Train up a child in the way he should go. Even when he is old, he will not depart from it. That is a general truism in the book of Proverbs. It's our job to train them up so that when they're older, they will not depart. A rod and reproof impart wisdom, but a child who is unrestrained brings shame to his mother. If you've been to Walmart, you've probably seen that a few times. Child training, it takes a lot of time. And years ago, there was a lady named Judith Harris who wrote a book called Do Parents Really Matter? And her argument was that basically they don't. And on the nurture nature argument, she basically said your kids are going to be what they're going to be based on two things, their DNA and their peers. You can want this or want that, but their DNA, like we talked about this morning, your chemicals and your peer group, that's going to decide who they are. Now, she did, and it was reviewed in one of the news magazines, and fortunately, in the science section there, the writer pointed, you know, you could tell didn't agree with everything in this book. But they said, she did say there are some things you can do. Since your children are going to be controlled by their peers and not you, you need to make sure to make enough money to live in the best school district so that they have the best kids as their peers. By the way, one problem with that is assuming that more money means better kids. There's a fallacy there. And oh, those kids are from a rich family. They're going to be good people. Doesn't mean that. That's not how life works. And then she said, make enough money to dress them in the latest styles because they want to fit in, you know, because appearances count, and make enough money for, of course, orthodontics and maybe plastic surgery if needed. So that's what you can do as a parent. And it occurred to me, in some cases, that may be about right. If you don't spend time with your children, if you see them a few minutes a day, if you're too busy doing your own thing and mom and dad are both, you know, pursuing their agendas and their careers and everything else, and they're off at school all day, and then or they're at the daycare, and then send them off for the summer, and they're, and you occasionally see them, then guess what? Their DNA and their children and their peers are going to have a lot more effect than you are, and the internet and the media and such. That's not what the Bible says. The Bible tells us, train up a child in the way it should go. And that's going to take some time. If you plant seed in the spring and don't tend the garden, what are you going to get? If you don't put any time into that garden, you're going to grow weeds. So what do we want? You know, and have you ever noticed this? People who don't invest time in their kids, and they look at somebody that did invest time in their kids and say, well, you're lucky. Your kids were just good kids. That's like if I have a big weed patch and I look at my neighbor and he's got this great garden. Oh, you had lucky vegetables. That wasn't what it is. He put time into that. A cat and a bird. A robin, when it builds a nest in your backyard and lays that egg, in about 2 weeks, that baby robin will fly away from the nest. A kitten has longer with the mother, but very small in proportion to its life. Why does a robin not need to spend a lot of time with mom? Doesn't need to be trained and learn a lot of things from mom. There's some instinct, you know, it's, and off it goes. It's going to know how to build a nest, even though it didn't see the nest, you know, it's in being built. You have a baby 2 weeks old. Can you just let it go on its own? 2 months old, 2 years old, 10 years old. God gives us a lot of time. Because see, human beings need to be able to do more than eat worms and fly. And we need to train them. Let's move on here through this. Deuteronomy 6, we read these verses the other day. For sake of time, I'm not going to turn and read them now. But you remember, what did it say in Deuteronomy 6? Teach these children, these things to your children. When you rise up, when you lay down, when you walk in the way. Ephesians 6:4, fathers, you know, bring your children up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. These are responsibilities that we have to do. And start that early. For lesson one, when you get married, if you do that, and have kids, if you do that, and you get that baby, one of the first lessons, now it's not in the first few weeks, but down the road, is some basic vocabulary. What are the first words that a baby learns? Yes. You know, mama and no are some of the first two words that the baby learns. And I'm going to tell you this. I decided when I was a teenager, I would see kids go, no. And I decided, I'm not going to have that. Okay? And I raised 6 kids, and I didn't have that. I'm not going to say not a one of them ever did it once. But if your kid one time goes, no, there needs to be some consequences whereby that child understands that is not going to happen again. Don't do that. This is really fundamental. Basic vocabulary, helping the child understand the word no means no. So, early child training and no. Think about the importance of this. In the garden, God has created man, God has created woman. I'm assuming they're fully adult looking, whether they had a belly button or not, I don't know, but I'm assuming they look like an adult, but how mature are they? They don't have a knowledge of good and evil at this time. They haven't been around a long time. So they're not really mature. God gives them a rule. What is the rule? See this tree right here? This one? No, no. You can eat all of those. This one right here? No, no. What does Eve do? She eats it. She gives it to Adam. He eats. In Exodus chapter 20, coming out of Egypt, there's some really deep things in the law, like love your neighbor as yourself. Paul says if you'll do that, it sums up all the other commandments. Don't steal. So why didn't God just say love your neighbor as yourself? Well, we need some specifics. And by the way, would you say the nation coming out of Egypt was an especially mature generation? Not so much. They're whining and murmuring all the time in the wilderness. But there are specifics there. Most of the Ten Commandments, a lot of the Ten Commandments are no-nos. No-no on the killing, no-no on the stealing, no-no on the false witness, no-no on the idolatry, no-no on the murder, no-no on the coveting. Now, when you get to a higher level, like Paul says in Romans 13, owe no man anything but to love your neighbor as yourself. Because if you love your neighbor as yourself, you've fulfilled the law. If you love your neighbor as yourself, that covers don't kill, don't commit adultery, don't covet, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But if one of us, if we were all going to go somewhere, and if you had a bunch of toddlers here, and I volunteered to keep the toddlers, and some of you moms say, now, if he gets out of line, you know, feel free to, you know, straighten him out like you would your own. I say, oh, we're not going to have any problem. I'm just going to tell all these children that we're going to respect each other and be considerate of other people. Well, you know what's going to happen with a room full of toddlers? I'm going to have to start getting specific. No-no on the hitting, no-no on the kicking, no-no on that type of thing. But we need specifics. And a child doesn't have to understand the reason for every no. Don't let your child get you into debates. There will be times where you need to explain reasons for your children. Like in the Old Testament, it'll say, when your children see these stones and ask, what are these? Explain it to them. When they say, why do we do this Passover? Explain it to them. There are things that we need to explain to the children, but do not let a cycle develop where they think that they don't need to obey until it's been explained. A one-year-old, a two-year-old doesn't have the capacity to understand every reason why they can't run out in the street or touch a hot iron or something else. And when you get into the, no, well, why not? Well, because mommy said, but why not? Well, because if you do this, something bad could happen. Well, I'll be careful. Well, but what if this happened? Well, I would hear it. You're teaching the child to not respect your authority. You're teaching them to litigate and argue like, no. There will be times to explain things to children and help them learn. But at an early age, what they need to understand is when mom said no, it's no. When dad said no, it's no. And when mom said no, don't slide over there to dad and see if you can get a different verdict. So the prohibitory no. I've said this many times, and it's probably hyperbole, but it's not that much of an exaggeration. I feel that if you train that little child to respect the word no, half of your job as a parent is done. There will be a lot of other challenges that come in and difficult things and such, but so much is accomplished by getting that child to understand no, that everything else will be easier because they understand that. We'll talk about that in a minute. But because of that, if you don't mean it, don't say it. If you do mean it, enforce it. Jesus said, let your yea be yea and your no be no. Don't be one of those parents, no. Now, now, but why do, now, but can I do this? Now, can I, well, but this and this, but then, and finally, well, okay. That drives kids crazy. Don't do that. There may be some occasion where you said no, and a respectful child that's not being a little lawyer, a respectful child says, Mom, can I give you some information? And they say, yeah. And said, yesterday, you know, we were able to accomplish this and get that done and everything, and so we were, and then mom come out and say, oh, I didn't realize that. Then sure. But don't let that be the norm, okay? Don't let that be the norm. Basically, if you say no, enforce it. If you don't mean it, Don't say it. Listen, good parenting is not saying no all the time. You know, Mom, can I play on the interstate? No. Can I play on the road? No. Can I play in the cul-de-sac? No. Can I play in the yard? No. Can I play in my room? No. Can I have fun? No. Can I breathe in and out? No. That's not a good parent. You know, there needs to be lots of yeses. Yes. Yes. You know, sometimes, can we get a donut? Yes. There needs to be some of that. Dad, can we go play ball? Yes. There should be lots of yeses. It shouldn't all be no. But when it's no, they need to respect it. So, vocabulary test. If you've got a child in your house, especially a young one, what does no mean to my child? If they think no means tantrum time, you're doing it wrong. If they think no means the defense attorney may now cross-examine, you're doing it wrong. If they think no means don't do it while Mom and Dad are watching, you're doing it wrong. If they think no means no, you've got the groundwork for going forward. Don't put up with children going, no. Now, it teaches respect for authority. It teaches I won't always get my way. It teaches that behavior is more important than desire. And it teaches self-denial and self-control. What did Jesus say? If you want to follow me, you must, Luke 9:23, deny self. You know, a lot of these rioters and looters and protesters and stuff, some of these people are probably people that were allowed to throw tantrums when they were little, and they haven't learned. Do we always get our way? No. Can I tell the state trooper that I don't want to be told no? I heard a fellow talking one time on the radio. He was might have been a sports program, I'm not sure. But he said he was a part of, this was years ago, he was telling about, because it was while you still had vinyl records. And they're at a party, and one of the kids is taking the needle and coming across the record, just and he went over and said, no, don't do that. And the mom goes, we've decided our child will not be told no. And he said, later I had to deal with this kid, like in Little League. And he was a terrible kid. And when that kid grows up, are the state troopers going to buy into the idea that he should never be told no? Is his boss going to be, you know, oh, by the way, boss, my mom said I'm not going to be told. Nobody else is going to buy into the world that this little guy is the center of the universe except his mom. And she's not doing him a favor. She is doing him a huge disfavor. Respect for authority. I won't always get my way. Behavior is more important than desire, and you need to deny self. When that kid learns, and you go, no, no. You see what they've already learned? All of that. So then other things, they'll grow up and it'll get more complicated, but that foundation is there. That is huge, huge, huge. And their learning to submit to an earthly father prepares the child for submission to a far more important father. Have you ever seen brethren that they look at the word of God and they don't want to accept the no? And they want to argue with it? Well, but in that type of thing, or work their way? Learn that. Teach that. Teach a respect and compliance for the prohibitory no and a zero tolerance for the defiant and rebellious no. Because they learned the power of that word, and then they decide to try it. No! Don't put up with that. Do not put up with that. Avoid an upside-down home. If you're looking for a house and the realtor takes you there, you might say, yeah, I'd like to see that. If they take you there, no, you're not interested. You don't care if it has granite countertops and hardwood floors. That house is upside down. And this country is full of upside-down houses right now where the kids are in control. Let me tell you a story. So I've done this series for years. And years ago, I was doing it in Birmingham, and somebody gave me this story. I thought, that's really good. I'm going to add it in. I figured it was apocryphal, not really true. But I added it in, and years later, I'm doing it in Tennessee, and Sarah Bain Bunning was there and said, no, that is true. My husband's the one that saw it. So Bob Bunning actually saw this. Happened years ago. He was in a meeting in Florida. She gave me some extra details. And there's this little tyrant, and wealthy family had some money. They'd done expensive interior decorating and everything, but none of the curtains hardly were in place. They'd been pulled down by the little kid and everything. And for breakfast, kids, I think, in the high chair, and the parent fixes them some breakfast, and the child goes, "I don't want it." And the parent goes, "What do you want?" "I want a worm." The adult, you'll see why I'm putting adult in air quotes here, the adult went outside, dug around, and found a worm and brought it in. "I want it cooked." They put it in the skillet and they cooked the worm. "I want it cut in half, and you eat half of it." The adult cut it in half and ate half of it. Run out of orders to give the little tyrant, and then finally the kid's back to that they didn't want it. Who's in control in that house? You had an out-of-control child controlling the parents. Is that going to make, is that a happy child sitting there? That is a miserable child sitting there and extremely foolish adults not doing their job. Children, it should be joyous, it should be fun, they should be learning, they should be growing, they should develop strengths and everything, but children thrive on boundaries. They don't always like the immediate boundaries, but they thrive on boundaries. They need that. If you've had kids in your home that come from a place where it's chaotic and there's no boundaries, they get in your house and there's some rules. You know, you don't start eating before we pray. You don't, we don't do this. We're not going. But have you noticed how much that child likes being in your home where the rules are? I heard about a study one time done with kids in a playground. And with no fence, in a city with buses and strangers and trucks and stuff, the kids tended to stay in the middle of the playground. They put up a fence, and the kids played all over the playground. Now they know where the boundaries are. That's good for children. Don't have upside-down homes. This is, I think, from Michael Pearl. I might have adapted it a little bit, but it's mostly his wording here. He wrote some books about child training. He said, too many children view the home, the parents, the food, etc., as merely a means to an end, to satisfy and please the child. The child makes his demands, manipulates the parents via tantrums and repeated misbehavior. Parents who bow to the will of the child in efforts to placate and appease his whims and dissatisfaction or suffer through increased strife and conflict when they cannot. It's like a house built upside down. The child needs to learn, it is not me first, then parents, then God. Nope, that's not how it works. It's God. And then dad, mom, child. And that's how it works. And it should be a secure, safe, growing place, loving place for that child. And then he can grow up, and if he chooses to, leave his father and mother and cleave to his wife, and they two shall become one flesh. I used to live next door to a kid. Parents were Christians. She'd apparently read one of these books, like Don't Spank Your Kids and Don't Do Much Discipline and stuff. This is a four. Four is like about my favorite age. I really enjoy kids a lot. If I wasn't 61 and my wife wasn't 57, I'd like to have another baby now. I love having kids. Four is about my favorite age. And I got to tell you, this is kind of sad to say, I did not like this kid. And that sounds really, really bad. You know, a four-year-old and you didn't like that. How can you not like a four-year-old? Well, let me describe this four-year-old. So, parents are over here, I'm sitting on my porch, or my steps, he's over there with this other kid, and repeatedly, they're calling for him, screaming for him, change the names, protect the guilty, you know, Philip, come on, Philip, come home. Nothing happens. A little bit later, Philip, get over here, nothing happens. You've seen this type of thing. Finally, he starts strolling along in front of me with his little friend. I was, Philip, why didn't you go when your parents called? I didn't hear him. His little friend, yes, you did. You know, I go, I open my car door. Nice big pile of dirt Philip has put there. One time, Philip opens my door, doesn't knock on the door or anything, just opens my door, goes. He's in overalls. They are soaking wet in the front and they're brown in the back. And he goes, I don't have to use the bathroom. Now you'll understand why I did not like this four-year-old. But you know what? It wasn't that four-year-old's fault. As he grew up, I don't know where he is today, but wherever he is today, he needs to not keep blaming his parents for failing to do their job, because at some point you got to start taking responsibility yourself. But at 4 years old, there was foolishness in the heart of that child, as there will be. Foolishness is in the heart of the child, but the rod will drive it far from him. But they didn't do their job. That is a terrible thing to do to a child. The rod and the proof give wisdom. A child left to his shame brings mother. Common mistakes to avoid. We're going to start kind of click. There's, when I do this, usually this will be like drawn out with illustrations and things. I'm going to go through and just kind of, I'll highlight some, otherwise we'll just click them quickly. But I want you to at least hear each of them. Failing to discipline. That's mistake number one. He who spares the rod hates his son. He who loves him disciplines him diligently. Proverbs 13. Proverbs 19, discipline your son while there's hope. Don't desire his death. Foolishness is bound up in the heart of the child. The rod of discipline will drive it far from him. Proverbs 22, do not hold back discipline from the child. Although you strike him with the rod, he will not die. And by the way, understand the difference between discipline and abuse. There are people that are abusing their kids and they need to be in jail. Discipline is for out of love for the child. He who loves him disciplines him diligently. And sometimes if we're angry about something, really wise to wait and say, we're going to talk about this in a minute. You know, get calmed down and then do what you do out of love and benefit for the child. Not to vent because you're angry that something happened that you don't like. That's not what this is about. This is about training the child. Be calm, do it out of love for the child. And like one kid said to his sister, he said, cry louder and they quit quicker. You know, it's just because they're wailing doesn't mean. All right, Proverbs 29:15. The rod and reproof bring wisdom, but a child who gets his own way brings shame to his mother. Correct your son, he will give you comfort. He will also delight your soul. Rewarding misbehavior. This is mistake number two. Rewarding misbehavior. Who would do that? Here's $5. Go kick grandma. No, nobody does that. But parents reward misbehavior all the time. Why do children throw tantrums? Yeah, so there goes this, or, you know, I want that, I want that, I want that. No, we're not getting that. But I want it, I want it, I want it. No, we're not, we're just getting these things today. But I want that, I want that. No, shh, no. But oh, you're mean, shh, you're mean. You know, I hate you. And then mom starts looking around at the other. I'm sorry. You know, you're embarrassing me. Yes, he's embarrassed. He knows how it works. You know, when I'm thirsty and I want a drink, I understand. I put 2 quarters in, I push the button, I get my drink. He understands how it works too. You start embarrassing mom, you start pitching a fit and yelling and screaming stuff, and she gets embarrassed, and finally, what's she do? All right. That's why, you remember the Somali pirates? I was like, when pirates started up again, I thought, really, pirates? Why did they keep doing it? Because they would misbehave, grab a ship and grab the people, and then a country or the ship's owner would drop them a bag with $1 million or so. So then guess what they did? They did it again and again and again. Got some military ships over there and put a stop to that stuff. And they realized that this is not going to work. But when you reward misbehavior, guess what you get? You get misbehavior. Lowering the bar, accommodating misbehavior. Letting a child get his way is not doing him a favor, it'll spoil him. Letting him get his way will not satisfy him, it will spoil him. Somebody said the difference between a boy and a pig is if you give both of them everything they want, you'll get a really tasty pig and a really rotten kid. Don't do that. A child who gets his own way brings shame to his mother. When it's a good thing, yes, sometimes let them get their way, but don't let them think that they're in charge. Don't let them act like that. Expecting misbehavior, another mistake. This is not aiming for it, wanting it or desire it, it's just expecting it. Oh, we can't take him to a restaurant. There's no way Junior's going to sit still for an hour. Well, after all that sugar, he's going to be impossible. By the way, I want to talk about that one for a second. You may have somebody in your family that does have a reaction to certain type of foods, whether allergy or whatever, and if you've learned they need to not have that food, okay, that's well and good. But a lot of misbehavior has been blamed on sugar where sugar wasn't the problem, and I'll prove it. How many of you have seen birthday parties where well-trained, good little kids are having a blast? They are having fun, they're running, they're playing, and they have just eaten birthday cake with inordinate amounts of icing and ice cream, and they're drinking Kool-Aid with it. But the well-trained kids, when it's time to go tell Mrs. Johnson, thank you. Oh, okay. Thank you. We really enjoyed it. Help pick up the toys. And they pick up the toys. And they're a little sad the party ended, but they enjoyed it. And they help, and they clean up, and they get in the car, and they go. They just had a bunch of sugar. But well, sugar gives energy. Yeah, so does gasoline. But I can't go down here, fill up my tank, take out down the road, 80 miles an hour, and a trooper pulls me over. What do you think you're doing? You're doing 80 and a 30. Well, after all that gasoline, that's not an excuse. Oh, I'll never get him to eat that. Sorry, my son's not much of a sharer. Who hears all of this stuff? Junior hears all that stuff. It's excuses to let, he's got mom and dad in the role of thinking, you need to get used to it. I get to do what I want to do. Don't lower the bar and give up on training that little guy. Train him to be a better human being, and he'll be a happier human being. Foolishness is bound up in the heart of the child. Rod of discipline will drive it far from it. And as a general rule, there can be exceptions, and people grow up and they will have free will. But as a general rule, if you expect tantrums, you will get them. If you expect dishonesty, you will get it. If you expect bad attitudes, you will get it. If you really expect in the opposite and require and train for the opposite, you will get it. When, I guess they still have a Marine base at Paris Island, but back, if you remember, movies and stuff from the past, imagine the drill sergeant hears a bus pulls up with some 18, 19-year-old guys, and they get off the bus, right, for training there. Does he expect that all of them already do push-ups to his satisfaction, march to his satisfaction, have their uniform and their bed made? No, he doesn't think that they're there, but in 6 weeks, what are they going to be doing? Why? Because he expects it. Expecting much out of our kids doesn't mean, I thought they would never do anything wrong. Well, yeah, they're kids. But when you expect, you what? You bring them up to the expectations. When we start lowering their expectations, and this happens firstborn, lastborn a lot. Firstborn is expected. For somewhere along the way, the parent, this one's probably not going to do it. Don't do that. Failing to be consistent. This is huge, and it's really easy to do. Because sometimes we got energy, and sometimes we're tired. Sometimes we're in a good mood, sometimes we're not. And so we can be inconsistent. What does it say? He who loves him disciplines him diligently. Not inconsistently, diligently. I read an article, a lot of child psychologists are nuts, but one had made a really good point. He said they're like little gamblers. They'll play the odds. You see people buying lottery tickets? Why are they buying those lottery tickets? They don't think that today, for that $50, they're going to win today. They're hoping they might. They don't think it'll happen. Why did they spend the $50? Because it might. You know where to shut down the lottery? The state tells everybody, no more payouts at all. Nobody gets $28 million. Nobody gets $10. Nobody gets anything. You just get to have fun scratching the numbers. What would happen to lottery sales? Boom! When the little guy or the little girl learns it will not pay off, that's when it changes. If it pays off occasionally, They'll keep doing it. Even rats, they found, if they can do something, if occasion, it'll, addictive behavior, if occasionally it'll work, they'll do it and do it and do it, trying to hit that, you know, 13 or whatever. Let's keep moving. No parking. Suppose you got a nice historic area in the middle of town, pedestrian area, old cobblestones, that type of thing, see, like in Boston, and you can't have people parking there, so you got no parking signs. Now, what if you don't enforce it? What if everybody in town and all the tourists know how it goes? That if I park there and leave my car there, within 10 minutes, I'm going to get a little note that says, please do not park here. And if I still leave it there, I'm going to get a different note that says, we asked you not to park here. Then I'm going to get one that says, I really mean it, do not park here. And then I'm going to get one that says, don't make me tell you again. And then you'll get one that says, I'm going to start counting to 10. And if I leave it there an hour, I'm going to get a ticket. What would that area look like? You know, it would be full of cars that had all those different color stickers, right? So I was in Nebraska one time talking about this when I was with y'all years ago. And somebody at the congregation there told me about Mary Elizabeth. And they said, back in the family somewhere, Mary Elizabeth was upstairs playing. And mom says, Mary, get down here. Mary keeps playing. Mary, get down here. Mary keeps playing. Mary, get down. Finally goes to the middle name, you know. Mary Elizabeth, get down here. The aunt says, Mary, why aren't you going down there? Mary Elizabeth goes, she'll call me three more times. So, thinking I don't have time. I had a mom tell me, well, if I dealt with every time they disobeyed, the reason you're having so much trouble is because you're not dealing with that. Look at Hebrews chapter 12. Hebrews chapter 12. Verse 11. All chastening, and this is talking about the discipline, it's comparing God's chastening us to when we were children and our fathers did. In verse 9, when the fathers of our flesh chastened us. Verse 11 says, all chastening seems for the present to be not joyous, but grievous. Yet afterwards, it yields the peaceable fruit unto those that have been exercised thereby, even the fruit of righteousness. So, I don't have time. Is that what you do if your child comes home with lice? Mom, I got lice. I don't have time to deal with that today. No, what do? You realize this is going to get worse. We have to deal with this now. Take the time. Child training time is well invested time, and it saves time. Do it diligently, failing to control self. Children do not respond well to parents that are out of control. And this ties into the abuse thing as well. Children need to know and feel when they're being disciplined, they need to know mom. I used to do a routine oftentimes with my kids. I'd you know, take the floor, you know, I'd say, oh, or 3-year-old, 2-year-old, whatever. Oh, no. What did mommy say do? Mommy said, don't do it. I'd say, and what did you do? I did it. I said, so what do you have to get? The spanking. And you don't have to do it this way, but I found it effective to do it this way. I don't want the child to feel this is just something happening to them, so I'd involve them in it. I'd maybe talk about how many licks do you think you need, you know, to remember not to do that. If they go one, I'd say, I don't think so, but you know, I'd say, do you think four would be? And they, yeah, or something. And I'd give them a choice. I said, do you want to get your spanking first or go tell mom you're sorry first? And then they, you know, spanking first or whatever, and then they go tell mom, and they apologize, and they get the hug. That's important. It's not just, they disobeyed, I punished them, I sent them to the room, and they go off angry. That's not effective. You want to touch your heart. You're training the heart. And I'd say, when they were little, I'd just, you know, on the hands, then getting a little bigger would be here. So it's a 2-year-old or something. I'd say, oh, you know, which hand do you want it on? And what I'm doing, I'm involving them in it. You know, so they're realizing, yeah, I need this. And then I get that, you know, they get their four whacks or whatever. And then I said, now go tell mom you're sorry if they haven't done yet. And then they go and they say they're sorry. and then they get to hug. See, we're back to where things need to be. But sometimes we're angry. So, quick illustration here. Remember what the motive is: love. Discipline versus abuse. One time I saw a child expert on TV, and he was discussing with a male and female host, and there were people in the audience, and he's explaining how you never spank a child or anything. You never do that. And the lady on said, well, I've got a 2-year-old, and if they're going to touch something sharp or hot or something, I'll go like, no, no. And the expert goes, and it's important to know that's wrong. You know, you don't do that. You know, we're bigger than them, et cetera, et cetera. And then the lady in the back in the audience, she says, I have a problem yelling and screaming at my kids. And the expert goes like, oh, I've got a 4-year-old and a 3-year-old. You know, I yell and scream too. And it's like, yeah, you know, if you think you can't go, no, no, and you've got a rambunctious 4-year-old, can you see how that ends up? Which is worse? Which is abusing the child? Yelling and screaming at this poor little guy, or disciplining him and training him and having him say he's sorry and get his hug and move forward? Foolish, foolish. And then, what's wrong with you? I don't know why you won't do right. What did you just say to that kid? Imagine you're 4 years old, 5 years old, 6 years old, 7 years old. Do you know how to drive a car? No. Do you know how to make lasagna? No. Do you know how those things work? No. You're counting on who to know how things work? The adults. And the adults have just told you, what's wrong with you? I don't know why you won't do right. What did you just do? You just told that child, you're defective. And nobody knows why. How motivating or helpful is that? Don't take it out on the kids when we're not doing our job. When a little child is misbehaving, that's the responsibility of the parent to patiently, you know, train and help them to do that. Don't vent on the child. And let's do the vase test, all right? So, you've got, for this scenario, we're going to say, by the way, how many rules you have in your house is not as important as whether or not they're enforced. A household that has 6 rules and they're enforced is better than the household with 312 rules and it's iffy and who knows, you know, that type of thing. Kind of like some of the things going on these days. And we've got a room where we used to play football in that room, you know. So in this scenario, we're going to say, you have not already had a rule, no throwing balls in the house for this scenario. And you've got a vase, and that vase is from your great-grandmother, and it's been appraised, and it is a $3,000 vase, okay? It is your heirloom, okay? So Jaden, it comes in, he's got a ball, and he throws it off, and he catches it off the wall. And mom's doing something, he says, Jaden, you know, don't throw the ball in the house. Jaden looks at her. He knows it's not that he didn't hear her. And he throws the ball and he catches it. What do you do, Mom? A lot of moms say, Jaden, I told you not to throw the ball in the house. Jaden, I'm telling you, you better stop throwing that ball. Jaden, don't make me tell you again. Jaden, and she either gives up or she starts counting 10 or some other foolishness, but she's not correct. She's not, well, yeah, I'm corrected. No, you're nagging him. You're not addressing the misbehavior. Now he throws the ball, it clips the corner of the mantle, comes over, great grandma's vase shatters into a bunch of pieces. Now what does Mom do? Jaden, don't, oh no, no. No, we're way past that now. Now Jaden's gonna get a beating. He's gonna get screamed at, yelled at. Why? Yeah. There was something in that room worth more than $3,000, and it was Jaden's heart and soul. And that's broken. and she's not concerned about that. She's taken her anger out on him because her vase is broken. And that's not the most important thing in that room. And you know what? What if she went back there and said, Jaden, throw me the ball. And Jaden throws the ball, but he's not the most coordinated kid, and it hits the vase. Does he deserve a spanking? Nope. You allowed that, and an accident happened. He doesn't need to be spanked. He wasn't being disobedient. In other words, discipline not out of whether or not we're upset. It's not, here's some kids. You get to vent your anger on them. That's not what it's about. It's about training the children. So, in the first scenario, nothing broken. It's no big deal. She says, I asked you not to do that. Second scenario, no, that's not going to be your reaction. He's in big trouble now. You know what? He should have been in trouble the first time. Seeing her son's willful disobedience and disobedience, mom takes this very serious and is punished. When he looked at her, you know he hurt her, and he threw it anyway, right then. Everything else stops. He needs to be disciplined then for what happened then, irrelevant to that the base is safe. Calm, consistent, and in control. When we're not calm, how effective is our discipline? The child doesn't feel secure and safe when we're not calm. When we're consistent, and when we're in control, that helps make the discipline effective. Number 7, the mistake of training them to disrespect instructions given calmly. So, you know, it's Jaden's bedtime, and Jaden, I'm not saying you can't play computer games, but in this one we're going to have a kid that's just kind of addicted to computer games and also not misbehaving, so he's sitting there. Mom knows he's got a test tomorrow. Jaden, you've got a test tomorrow, you need to get to bed. You know, you got to go to bed now. Jaden, because he hadn't been taught better, doesn't say, yes, ma'am, and get up and go. He's like, okay. Human's like, Jaden, I said get to bed. All right, uh-huh. Jaden, but then after several times, nothing's happening. She gets involved with a phone call, you know, mother's on the phone, whatever, tied up with a bunch of issues. An hour later, she comes around. There's Jaden. And it's like, now she's like, Jaden, you better get up right now. And he gets up. And as he goes up the stairs, she goes, I don't know why. Well, you should know why. You've trained him to disrespect instructions given calmly. It's like the parking tickets. He knows that until mom loses it, she's not going to back it up. So it's like, okay, just a minute. Next level. He knows that until she's yelling, he can ignore her. And she's trained him that way. She didn't intend to train him that way, but she did. So I would suggest, Mom, have a talk with Junior and apologize. Say, I've not been handling this right, and I want to apologize for that. Say, do you like it when I yell and scream at you? He goes, no. Because he still hadn't learned to say, no, ma'am. He says, no. And she says, well, from now on, I'm going to stop yelling and screaming at you. I'm going to work on just not doing that. I'm not going to yell and scream. Jaden goes, cool. She goes, instead, I'm going to say it one time, and you're going to do it, or you're going to be punished. Next night, she says, Jaden, time to get up and go to bed. And by the way, you can give him some notice. Jaden, 5 minutes till bedtime, be winding up. You know, Jaden, time to go to bed. Okay. What? Yeah. Do you think it's going that he's going to believe her the first time? No, he's not. Because he's been well trained to ignore it. This is going to have to be trained. And then he gets a spanking, has a talk, has the lecture, everything, apologizes, goes to bed. If that keeps happening night after night, sooner or later, what's Jaden going to realize? That when mom gives him a warning, say ahead of time, 5 minutes to bed, okay, Jaden, time to go. She can train him to do it. So do we want them to never obey, obey after we scream, obey it after we say it over and over and over and over? Well, on the first time, I was doing a thing with a bunch of parents one time, and I was asking everybody, give your best parent advice in three words. And my favorite answer that night was somebody said, first time obedience. That's a good point. Fathers, discouraging, provoking your children to wrath. Twice Paul says this, don't do that. Mothers can do it too, but Paul singles out the dads. Some of you may have grown up in a home where you got one of two modes out of dad, criticism or nothing. If you did your job, you didn't hear anything about it. If you mowed the grass, you didn't hear anything about it. If you did well on the tests, he wasn't that interested, you didn't hear anything about it. But if you messed up, you know, if when you were mowing, you stepped on those new plantings, now you're in trouble. If you messed up on this, now you're in trouble. And that's all you got, criticism or nothing. That's not the way parents need to do it. They shouldn't expect a trophy for every time they do something right. There's something to be said for, like in the parable, does the servant expect to be thanked every time? But in the epistles, does Paul compliment the Thessalonians? In the seven letters to seven churches, does he say, here's what you're doing right, here's what you're doing wrong? It's a lot easier to take that than when somebody only focuses in, you know, on, say, you got a wart right here. And somebody goes, you got a wart. You know, that's not the whole picture. It's really destructive to just do that. And what some kids do then, they disobey to get dad's attention. I knew mom had a child. He ended up in a very perverse homosexual lifestyle. He was rejected by his father as an infant. And when he was young and he was in like a reform school and there was security there, and when the kids would misbehave, the security would physically restrain him. This is what he said to his mom. He said, Mom, do you know why I act bad at school? So those men will hold me. Isn't that heartbreaking? If his dad wouldn't have rejected him, if his dad would have been there for him, you know, but he couldn't get attention any other way from a male, and so he did that. Guess now who is ripe for a homosexual, you know, pedophile type situation. And that's the lifestyle he ended up in. Don't expect talents beyond their capacity. You know, if Jaden is 110 pounds soaking wet, your dreams that he was going to be a linebacker are not going to happen. Don't put that on him. If she's tone deaf, you know, don't think, but I thought she would be an opera singer. Don't expect things beyond their capacity, but expect what they can do. One of the things that's beautiful about parents with special needs or certain situations is when they allow that child and challenge that child to grow as they can without expecting what they can't. There was a gentleman I used to study with, elderly gentleman. He told me about going to Thanksgiving one time, and there was an extended family member there. He was just amazed. So this young man, by birth defect, he had no arms, and he had a nub, but no arms. And it's Thanksgiving dinner. Well, how's he going to eat? He said his mom put his food there, and he had a spoon. And he would take his mouth and he would put the spoon under the food. And with his nub, he would flip the spoon and catch the food. And he said, at the end of the meal, I had more of a mess around my plate than he did around his. And later in the afternoon, when people were having snacks, his mom would walk by every once in a while and just put a snack on his shoulder. And when he got ready for it, he would get it. Now, it would have been beautiful if that kid would have had a full arm and a full arm. But you see how much better that is than just hooking him up to an IV? She allowed and encouraged her child to do what he could with his handicap. but don't expect them what they can't do. And don't let it be based on your mood. We talked about fences before. An electric fence, if you're a cow in a field and you know where the electric fence is, you're secure. But if it's always moving, that's not very secure. You know, here's some clover. I think I'm good. You know, don't have a child in an insecure thing like that. Number nine, failing to parent with joy. Have you ever seen a home where there's rules and the rules are obeyed? You know, sit down at the table, say grace, pass the peas, hand me this, you know. Don't make your kids grow up in a place where there's no joy. Look at all these verses about joy. Rejoice in the wife of your youth. The father of the righteous will greatly rejoice, will have joy of him. Let your father and mother be glad. Let her rejoice who gave birth to you. A joyful heart makes a cheerful face. When the heart is sad, the spirit is broken. A cheerful heart has a continual feast. Better is a dish of vegetables where love is than fat and ox served with hatred. Law of kindness is on her tongue. A joyful heart is good medicine. A crushed spirit dries up the bone. And one of the three first fruits of the spirit are joy. Recently in Rhode Island, I was doing a session with some parents, and I said, what was one of your favorite memories as a child? And it was really interesting. Nobody mentioned when somebody bought me this expensive thing. Nobody said when we went to Disney World. I said, what was your favorite memory from childhood? And there was some stuff like sitting in the Lazy Boy with Dad watching this particular show, eating sardines. Or on this certain night of the week when Dad would make popcorn, and he would make the real popcorn, you know, put it in the thing with the oil and stuff. And then that was the type of things. One kid did remember going on a cruise. His dad had won a cruise, and the dad, his parents were divorced. He didn't get to spend much time with his dad. And so the dad asked him to go on there. So, you know, he really valued that. But everything else was just simple. Think about what are some things that you really remember from your childhood. And you know what? You don't know what things our children are most going to remember. Sometimes you might think, they'll remember this. You know, I remember when I got Zach Thomas the Train, and he was little. I thought, oh, he's going to be so excited he got Thomas the Train. I had misunderestimated the marketing. He opens it up. Where's his friends? Because it was Thomas and Friends. So sometimes what you think it will be is not what it is. But let there be joy in the home. Games, fun, etc. Number 10, failing to use the rod and reproof. Just use the rod. What did they learn? Smack! What did he learn? Stay away from Dad. Just reproof, don't do that. That's it. Bertina watched a lady at Walmart one time, and she's the kids kicking her, trying to kick her, yelling, I hate you and stuff. And she goes, it doesn't make mommy feel good when you do that. Of course not. That's why he's doing it. You know, just reproof, that doesn't do anything. The rod and reproof. Listen, there's value in the lecture. If you grew up in a home where when you misbehaved, you got a spanking, but you also got the lecture. Let me see your hand. Yeah. Which did you wish they would skip? Don't do the lecture. Yeah, you know, I don't want the spanking, but you know that only hurts here. Where did the lecture hurt? Here. You know, and then there's the anticipation. You know, if I go to get a shot and the doc says, you need a shot, that's not quite so bad. But if he goes, I hate to tell you this, Scott, you're going to have to get a shot. You know, you shouldn't have been barefoot out there around those nails. It's a bad idea. It really hurts a lot. Roll up your sleeve. You might want to hang on to something. You know, it's the same prick in my arm of the needle, but the anticipation kind of turbo boosts it. It doesn't need to be as hard, but just like that. The rod and reproof bring wisdom. Settling for situation control instead of training the child. I'm not going to take time to talk about this one except to say when there's something wrong and instead of training the child, you just fix it. Like they won't get in their car seat, fine, I'll put them in their car seat. No. If they're old enough to get in their booster seat and they didn't do it, don't you put them in there. Take the time to train them and they get in without disobeying. Because if you did it, they didn't have to obey. You controlled them, but you didn't train them. Those are three of my kids. I had this thing the Brianne there, the one in front, hardly ever gave me any trouble. One day, she decided to go for it, 3 years old. She would not get in the booster seat. And I pull over, and I said, "You didn't get in like I told you." I got a switch like my mom used to, and I gave her the talk, I gave her the spink, I said, "Now get in." She got in, she sat down beside the booster seat. I brought her back out. We went through it again. And then she cried, but not as much as usual, you know. And then she got in beside the booster seat. I brought her out again. This was the fifth time before she sat in the booster seat. Now, what would have been easier? Just put her in. Would that have trained her? That would have controlled her. It wouldn't have trained her. Later that day, I said, "Brianne, did you think that Daddy was going to give up?" And she went, "Uh-huh." It's like she needed to find out that day Dad wasn't going to give up. This idea, they're not going to do that under my roof. That's a lousy parenting attitude, because they can do it under somebody else's roof or their own roof. Train them. It doesn't say control them, and when they are old, they'll go in the right way. It said train them, and when they are old, they're going right. Train their heart. There's a little boy in class that the teacher said, sit down." He kept not sitting down. He finally sat down, but he goes, "Okay, but I'm still standing up on the inside." Job's not done. He needs to be sitting down on the inside. Don't make the mistake of thinking taking them to church is bringing them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Really sad thing I heard one time, a dad was telling me, he said, "I have four children." They were all in about their 40s or so, 30s, 40s. He said, "I have four children. None of them are faithful." He said, "We took them to church all those years. I don't know what happened." And right in that sentence, I knew what happened. Listen to what he said. "We took them to church all those years." He thought that taking kids to church was what you needed to do. Yeah, take them to church, but how much of a kid's week is at church compared to all the other stuff at school and TV and commercials? And that's not Deuteronomy 6. Let me move forward. Thinking if we don't allow this, he might rebel and leave the church. What good is being in the church if they're not in the Lord? Friendship with the world is hostility with God. And thinking about how people dress. In the Bible, there was Adam and Eve put on some loin coverings. God put some clothes on them. The priest, they wore some things for fanciness, for glory. They wore breeches from here to here to cover the flesh of their nakedness. We talked about the attire of the prostitute and different things. People are dressing terribly now. You see that envelope there? There's a purpose in that. It shows what should be shown, and it covers up what should be private. That is not meant to be private right there. This two fences there, that adds value to the property, but it also keeps people from looking at what they don't need to be looking at. That other fence on the right, he's wanting to show that off. He wants you to see that mansion. We got too many people, instead of dressing like that, they're dressing like that. Don't start dressing your kids that way. Assuming cultural norms, terrible twos. Oh, they're two. Well, they're just terrible. No, twos can be wonderful. Well, teens, he's a teen, rebellious teen. Remember Josiah? Age 16, sets his heart to serve the Lord. Timothy might have been a teenager when Paul picked him up. When you start doing the math, don't have time for that. Going into defense mode when our children are wrong. A lot of parents do this. Their child, no. Defending, denying, redirecting blame. 1 Timothy 5 said, do all things without partiality. If something was done wrong and it's your kid, shouldn't have done that. Something's done wrong and it's my kid, also shouldn't have done that. And when you come to me and say, Scott, you know, your guy in class today, he kept getting out of his seat, crawling under the table, wouldn't listen. You're not my enemy, you're my friend. Because he wasn't doing that in front of me, but he did it in front of you, and I needed you to tell me that. It's not, and you know what? Woe to good that call evil good and good evil. And if you start a pattern of bailing them out, don't be surprised when they come to expect it. As in, Mom, I'm in jail, bail me out. Failing to train humility. I wish I had more time to talk about this, but this is really important. I've a couple of guys in particular that I saw raised up in good families, very conservative families, a lot of values, did a lot of things right, but they didn't train humility. Pride. Different things grow well different places. Where does corn grow well? Corn grows really well in a sunny field, right? There's stuff that grows under the crisper drawer in your refrigerator that grows really easily under there that wouldn't grow as well as a different environment. If I came in here and said, hey, I'm opening a meth lab and I've got some samples out here, that's not going to work in a religious environment. But you know what grows really well in a religious environment? Pride. You look at the Pharisees. If we train our kids, oh yeah, oh, you're the best song leader. Oh, you, oh, did you beat all the other kids, you know, in the memory verse and everything? Oh, you're, and you just foster this pride. I want my child up front, dude. You can get some really horrible. 6 of 7 abominations. What's number one before God? A haughty look. The first three Beatitudes have to do with humility. If we haven't trained our kids to be humble, I don't care how excellently they preach or well they lead singing or how much they contribute to the church. It's ungodly and it's destructive. Train humility. Focusing on home income instead of home outcome. We talked about this yesterday. Underestimating threats, we already talked about this morning. Last one I want to mention, lowering the bar from the firstborn to the baby. The Bible doesn't say a lot about birth order, but stop and think about this. In Luke 15, which son was it that wanted all the money and went away and squandered it in riotous living? It was the younger one. Very often, an oldest child will become mature quicker, and the youngest child will be immature longer. There's some reasons for that. And Jesus didn't have to put that in there. And by the way, it doesn't have to be that way. Sometimes I'll meet a youngest child that acts like a firstborn. And sometimes a firstborn acts like a youngest child. We don't have to stick to the stereotypes. But it's like a mom, I was talking to a mom one time, and she had one child. She's married to a husband. They have nice kids. They have a family business together. They've got a lovely home. Things are going well. And the other child lives over the garage, smokes pot, and doesn't have a job. I said, was he your baby? She said, how did you know? It doesn't happen either way, but it's common. Here's some of the reasons why. And I know I've gone long today, but I'm going to blame it on Earl. Because Earl told me don't feel rushed. And so I'm sorry. I'm sorry. But we're almost done. Why so? Well, first off, percentage of time. When your firstborn was born, how much of your parenting time was available to that child? All of it. Child number 6, how much time? I didn't have as much time for child number 6. Pacifier illustration. Your firstborn, you've just come home from the hospital, and a day or two, or one day, a few days later, there's a pacifier and it hits the ground. What did you do with that pacifier? Did you sterilize it under boiling water? Or maybe you threw it away because from the shower there are some other ones that's up. What happens with child number 4 and the pacifier hits the ground? For one thing, you saw the firstborn after you were so careful, can't let it get a germ there. And then he's licking a boot or eating out of, you know, gum that he found somewhere. Ah! And you start finding the kids are more resilient than you thought they were. So you end up what? Easing off. It's not that big a deal. Well, yeah, they didn't survive age 1 and 2 because you sterilized the pacifiers. But you remember all the compliments the firstborn got? Oh, he's so good. You know, he said please to grandma. He said thank you to grandma, all those things. He's so good. He's so good. And so parents say, wow, this is a lot easier than I thought. They didn't die. Everybody says he's a great kid. And they let off on both things. Well, the baby didn't need the pacifier clean, but he needed to be taught, say please to grandma, say thank you to grandma, and that gets let up, and that starts making a difference. Thirdly, when your firstborn was born, he came into a family where every other person was an adult. And so what do you start modeling? But when you're the last born in a family, you come into a family where it's adults and kids, and you're not as motivated to copy that. And on your firstborn, did you have a baby book? Did you mark when they got their first tooth, their first smile, their first word, their first step? Because you couldn't wait for each of those markers to come, right? Oh, wait, is that a smile? Oh, and you can't, it seems so long. There's a lot of crying, not a lot of smiling yet, a lot of spit up, no smile. There's a smile, and you can't wait for that next step. But by the time child number 3, 4, 5, or 6, you realize, wow, that goes by really quick. And you say, I don't want this one to grow up too fast. So they're still in their diaper, run around. It's cute. They're still, it's cute. It's cute. And then they're 34, and they live in the garage, smoking pot, and don't have a job. And when the older kid said, why did you just buy him a car when he's smoking pot and doesn't have a job? And mom says, don't you start talking about my baby. That's a huge disservice to that child, because that's not a baby. That's a 34-year-old human that should be a grown man, and somebody is babied. Don't do that. I know I went way over time. Thanks so much for your attention. I'm going to have mercy on you and let you go now. Thank you.